I'm Luis Hernandez, and welcome to the Florida Roundup on WLRN. Law enforcement has been under a very hot white light in recent years. With the widespread use of smartphone video and viral videos going online, police actions have been scrutinized thousands, if not millions of times, even before it makes the evening news. Specifically, officer-involved shootings. Some of these incidents have sparked protests and led to the Black Lives Matter movement. But look up statistics as to how many times police shoot someone, especially fatally, and it's hard to nail down specific statistics. Whether on a state or federal level, it's telling how many times officers have shot people is actually not tracked very accurately. Even FBI Director James Comey calls this lack of data embarrassing and ridiculous. Ben Montgomery is a reporter for the Tampa Bay Times, and he's putting together a new series called Why Cops Shoot. It's an effort to try and wrangle those statistics and better understand what's happening within law enforcement agencies across the state of Florida. Ben Montgomery is also founder of the narrative journalism website, Gangry.com, and he joins us now. Ben, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
You know, going through your story, going through the series, and of course all the data that you've collected, one of the sharpest points that comes from the research is the fact that blacks are four times more likely to be shot by police than whites. I want to know what really was the story or the moment that launched this project.
After the shooting of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, it was the first time that I remember coming into contact with the idea that nobody keeps count of these things. And I had done, a reporter, nearly two decades. I've done plenty of stories about statistics before, and I know, for instance, the Florida Department of Law Enforcement can tell us how many times there were purse snatchings in 2008. And it blew me away that this wasn't something that we kept track of in any standard fashion. There was a lot of hand-wringing in the press at the time about how nobody keeps count. And I was ranting about it in the newsroom. I was like, how do we know? This is 2014. There's so much information and data at our fingertips. How do we know? How do we not know how many times police shoot people? And so it started off as a rant. And somebody at a staff meeting was like, well, why don't we count? And I thought, Florida has pretty great public records laws. I had no idea how much work it would take, but I thought let's just ask every police agency for what at the time was 5 years worth of records, and at a bare minimum, just get a count to begin with, and then see where that goes.
As you said, you've been at this a long time, and so and I think like any reporter who's been at it a while, you kind of just. You're reporting each story as it happens, but maybe you're not thinking about that. When you started digging into the research, what did you imagine you might find out about officer-involved shootings?
I guess I had a hunch that, that black men got shot by police a lot. I probably had a hunch that a good chunk of people shot by police were mentally ill. These were hunches, and nobody could say if that was part of a trend, if my hunch was right. These shootings, without the context of a count, they happen in a void, and we don't know. I don't know how to properly respond to them as a citizen of the United States. I don't know how to respond to them if I can't say this is part of a trend. This is in keeping with how these things are going.
Because if you don't have the statistics to back it up, then it's just conjecture. It's just anecdotal. It's not
totally.
You went to all the different law enforcement agencies in the state to gather this information. You had to gather it in order to organize it. I'm wondering, what was the level of helpfulness and openness by the agencies in talking about this topic?
Well, they, just when it comes to the records, they varied. The larger agencies that deal with the media in the state on a regular basis were pretty quick to provide their records. The thoroughness and completeness of all those records, you know, was different agency by agency. But by and large, they would at least respond to us. They had an adequate system in place to deal with these kinds of requests for information. The smaller agencies, you know, maybe those that operate in a city with a weekly newspaper or a city that doesn't get a lot of media attention, they were, by and large, a little slower to respond. And I'm thinking, for instance, Jackson County and dealing, you know, up in the Panhandle, in dealing with Jackson County, they were willing to respond, but they said, look, our records aren't digitized, and we don't, you know, we don't keep all of the use of force reports in one place. So it took a lot of, you know, manpower to sort of track these things down for us. Others felt like they didn't have documents that were responsive to our requests, even though we knew that they had had police shootings. And so we had to show them, you know, here's what Chapter 119 says in the law, and here's what you've got to, you know, what you're required by law to give us. And so then they would fork over, you know, what they had.
When you looked at the data, at the finished data, you looked at everything, and it kind of really backed up your hunch, as you said. You found, again, that blacks were four more times likely to be shot by police than whites. Did any law enforcement agency, deputy, officer, chief, anybody, ever give you an explanation as to why?
You know, I think it's a lot of guesswork. We spent a lot of time with a guy named Mike Chitwood, who is he was the police chief of Daytona Beach for 10 years. He came up through the ranks in Philadelphia and the Philadelphia Police Department. He's now sheriff of Volusia County. And Chitwood had some interesting thoughts about this. He thought, look, a lot of police agencies don't racially reflect the communities they serve. He said, you know, there, we can deny this all we want, but, there, persists this sort of ingrained subconscious bias.
That's an argument that I hear in a lot of places. And I'm curious if anybody ever told you why that is. Is there not an effort to go out and to make the police force more reflective of the community by hiring more African Americans, Hispanics, or, you know, any other minority group?
Yeah, I mean, again, we're dealing with 388 police agencies in the state. Nationwide, that's 18,000 police departments with something like 800,000 police officers. But when you talk to chiefs and police administrators in the state of Florida, a lot of them feel like they are they have a difficulty trying to recruit minority residents. It might help them better reflect the population. And that, you know, a dozen reasons for that, I think. Part of it is the impression by, rightly or wrongly, the impression by some minority populations that the police are the enemy, that they don't, you know, they don't want to cooperate, they want to participate with police work.
That's an interesting point. I want to get to this. By the way, just mention real quickly, I'm speaking with Ben Montgomery, again, a reporter with the Tampa Bay Times, a new series out called Why Cops Shoot. More than that is the statistics they provide in the research that he's gathered over the last couple of years on the officer-involved shootings in the state of Florida. And as we've mentioned, that blacks are four times more likely to be shot by cops than whites. Looking through this, we'll have a post on our Facebook page so that you can go to the report and you can see it for yourself. A lot of powerful stories in this series, you know, in cases where, again, a police officer or officers shot someone, many times an unarmed person, and of course, the ramifications of that throughout not only the community, but within those departments. You just said something, Ben, about really the attitudes of, I started to hear you say a little bit about the attitudes of police in the relationship with communities and how communities don't trust the police. but I wanted to get at cops in general and their attitude toward the community. We spoke with Tallahassee criminal defense attorney Chuck Hobbs, and he writes about race and other topics for websites like The Hill. And he spoke with our Gina Jordan, and we asked him about the issue of police shootings and why it's escalating. And he had an interesting take. By the way, he is an African-American man.
I think it's fear. I think that most blacks, including me, understand that officers have a very difficult job. You'll find that in many cities, the focus is on crime. In the inner city, you'll see domestic violence, you'll see fights, you'll see shootings from the drug trade and what have you. So a lot of these officers, they see foolishness on a night in and night out basis. They've got young men who have no respect for the badge, who raise all sorts of hell with them, are willing to fight, do whatever it takes. And so I think that to a great extent, many of them suffer from some form of post-traumatic stress.
There are a couple of things that Mr. Hobbs said there, and I'm going to try to unravel a couple real quickly. Is one is the fact that officers specifically in certain neighborhoods are seeing crime at an elevated level, and it's impacting them, basically emotionally, and they're suffering from post-traumatic stress. Your data, what does it tell us about, you know, the way police react to certain communities, but also, I mean, what do you think from what you just heard? Is it really that police are struggling, with what they're seeing, that it's impacting their decision-making?
You know, this is so interesting because I spent a lot of time talking to a brain scientist at the University of South Florida named David Diamond. And I hesitate to get into the brain science of this, but he studies the effects of stress on the brain. And he did say that, there are clearly two sort of dominant parts of the brain, the hypothalamus, which gives us our primal instinct, our survival instinct. It makes a baby cry when it's hungry. It makes a rat run when it sees a cat, even if the rat has never seen a cat before. Then we have the prefrontal cortex, which gives us our reasoning and our socially acceptable behavior. And that prefrontal cortex, the reasoning part of the brain, develops throughout our upbringing and into our 20s, especially for men. And what he did say was, if you're subjected to in that age when the prefrontal cortex is continuing to develop, if you're subjected to stress on a regular basis, it can actually stunt the development of that prefrontal cortex and make you less likely to respond in a positive way to any subsequent stress.
All right, so wait a minute.
So that PTSD idea is super interesting to me, because maybe if you join the force and you're, 19, 20, 21 years old, your prefrontal cortex is not fully formed, and you take the worst shift because you're way down in the hierarchy of the police organization, and you're subjected to this stress over and over, night in and night out, you're dealing with the worst of the worst and the dregs of society, maybe it prevents you from responding. Like, the further you get into that and the further your prefrontal cortex development is stunted, maybe you get into a situation where you're less and less likely to respond in a positive, healthy way to subsequent stressful situations. I'm not a brain scientist, by the way. Let me just say that. But that makes sense to me.
So I'm trying to then gather, and having gone through your series and all these statistics, and now what you're telling me, I'm trying to figure out, is there any one thing we can point to and say this is where the problem is? Maybe it's not just one thing, but, are we talking about, young men who are joining the force and they're not able to really deal with all of this stress and it impacts their decision making, thus they make bad decisions? Is it racial bias? I mean, can you say there's any one thing that we really have to try to nail down on to try to solve this problem?
We cannot simplify this in that fashion. There is not one thing. This is a big, hairy, multifaceted issue. And I think to try to drill down on one particular thing is like doing the whole thing a disservice. I think we fix this by approaching it in a bunch of different ways. Writing policy that preserves, police policy that preserves the sanctity of human life. Common sense things like don't fire into vehicles, because if you kill a driver, you're creating a 3,000-pound unguided missile. We see that 57% of the shootings that start as traffic stops are the driver is black. That's incredibly out of whack racially. And that's in a state where, according to the ACLU and its analysis of public data, blacks are cited for seatbelt violations nearly twice as often as whites. So, you know, that's don't fire into vehicles. Create time and distance, right policy, police policy, create time to teach your officers, train your officers to not put themselves in harm's way, to train them to not, you know, to get better information, slow down, because you're gonna respond poorly in a stressful situation if you're working with bad information.
Are we training? That's one. Training our officers the right way? I go back to Mike Chitwood. Again, he's the former police chief at Daytona Beach. You had highlighted in your story. And some of the things he said were just mind-blowing, because I haven't heard police officers speak like this in a while. You know, he talked about a story where he got into a fight with a guy. He didn't shoot him. He decided, I'm just going to, you know, end the situation. It was during bike week. End the situation without shooting the guy. And he says that. He tells his officers, you know, it's the number one thing we're supposed to do, as he said in your story, was dealing with people. The number one complaint that Americans have about police is rudeness. It's not a proficiency in shooting. It's a proficiency in dealing with people. Are we training police officers to deal with people first?
I mean, the critics say no. And I think 388 police agencies, and many of them have different kinds of training. But I think it's deficient in a big way, depending on the agency. One cop I was talking to, just the story was written. I happened to be at a wedding, and I was talking to an undercover officer with a nearby sheriff's office. And this woman works with some of her job is to target the 6% of criminals in her community that are responsible, according to her, for 60% of the crime. So she's dealing with a very small percentage of the population and the worst offenders. And she told me that in order for her to get training that is not required by the department, so any extra training she wants to do, whether it's being more proficient with firearm skills or learning how to talk to people or dealing hand-to-hand combat or what have you, anything she wants to do, she has to take time off work and pay for it out of her own pocket. And, you know, she said the salary at the agency she works for is like $38,000 a year. So you're asking people who oftentimes are supporting their entire family to take time off work. That's missing pay from your agency. And then pay out of your own pocket to make yourself better at your job. That's a problem in my mind.
Are we helping?
Where are the funds that should be directed at this kind of, this kind of training?
Let me wrap on this. I have to, you know, state this, first of all, by saying that, and I have friends I grew up with who went into law enforcement, and I never want to disparage the police. This is an issue, and it's something that we have to discuss. One of the things I wanted to know is, really, is it just a problem with a small percentage of officers in departments? Because in what Mike Chitwood said that really hit me was that many of the problems that he sees is just 2% of the organization are what he called organizational terrorists. They're constantly in trouble. He's calling his own cops, a couple of them, a small percentage of them, organizational terrorists. Is it just a matter of a few bad apples that departments have to get rid of? Is that really what's causing the problem?
You know, I think that's a super interesting thing that I plan on drilling down on in future reportage. I was talking with an outfit in the city of Miami today. It's a police oversight outfit, and the leadership of this group, which has as its mission investigating police brutality and corrupt police practices in the city of Miami, they said, you know, it's really hard in the state of Florida to fire a police officer. The police officers have something called the Florida Police Officer Bill of Rights, which I'm admittedly unfamiliar with at this point, and almost like shamefully so. But they're making the case this morning that even if there's evidence to suggest that a cop is corrupt, and let's use Chitwood's anecdote that's 2% of the organization, even if there's evidence that this officer is not does not have as his core goal to protect and serve, it's really difficult to get rid of that officer. It's difficult to, you know, find fault legally, and it's difficult just to find, you know, to get a chief to the point where he or she wants to get rid of this bad apple.
This is a fascinating series. And again, Ben Montgomery, reporter with the Tampa Bay Times, with this new series out, Why Cops Shoot. You can also, by the way, check out a two-part series with Ben on the podcast Radio Lab. Ben Montgomery, I really appreciate your time, and thank you so much today.
Thanks very much for having me. I hope everybody thinks about this.
All right. Coming up, Palm Beach County is racking up quite a bill to protect President Trump every time he visits. Should the county start taxing him to get reimbursed? We'll talk about that coming up next here on WLRN's The Florida Roundup.